Today is Friday, November 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Several countries have announced restrictions on travel from southern Africa in reaction to a new coronavirus variant that may spread quickly.
We will be suspending all flights from six southern African countries.
Germany will form a new government in December after three parties agreed to form a coalition, including a foreign minister from the Green Party.
And here you definitely see the footprint of the Green Party, which has entered the coalition.
And Turkey's government reaffirms big interest rate cuts after the lira drops more than 40% in value this year. We'll have these stories and more next. A number of countries have halted air travel from southern Africa, and stocks plunged in Asia and Europe in response to a new coronavirus variant that scientists are worried could be very transmissible. South African scientists are scrambling to determine how quickly the variant can spread and if it is resistant to vaccines. The new strain has led Britain to reimpose flight bans on six southern African countries, which could deal another heavy blow to their economies. Linda Givtash reports from Johannesburg.
Coronavirus cases are once again on the rise in South Africa. Amid the spike, several mutations of a new variant called the B11529 have been detected in the country, Botswana, and Hong Kong. It has sparked concern it could compete with the previously dominant Delta variant and trigger another wave of the pandemic. Dr. Michelle Groom is with South Africa's National Institute for Communicable Diseases.
There's the potential that this could be more transmissible and that there is this potential immune escape, but we don't know yet. We are busy conducting some laboratory tests, obviously, where we can have a look at how, you know, this new variant reacts both to serum from people who have been infected previously as well as vaccinated, which will give us a better idea of the potential immune escape.
The uncertainty has prompted travel restrictions. Britain added six African countries to its so-called red list today, requiring quarantine for incoming travelers and temporarily banning flights. The European Union is also looking at halting air travel from southern Africa. The South African government has called the decisions rushed and raised concerns about the impact on business. The CEO of South Africa's Inbound Tourism Association, David Frost, says the effects will be devastating on the sector.
We got off the red list in October, and it was sorely needed. We've been shut down for over 18 months. You know, the industry really is on its knees. The impact of this is absolutely dire to livelihoods, to families.
While social distancing and mask use can help combat the virus, Dr. Groom also questions the efficacy of travel bans.
We haven't been able to contain the spread initially of the original virus, and all subsequent variants have spread globally, you know, so I think there's limited value in terms of these restrictions.
Instead, she says vaccinating more of the population would help prevent the most severe cases and deaths. Roughly 35% of South Africa's adult population is vaccinated, a figure far below targets of 70%. Figures are even lower across much of the continent. Experts have warned vaccine inequality would create a breeding ground for the virus to mutate. Astrid Haas is an independent urban economist in Kampala, Uganda.
In Europe now, and in North America in particular, they're talking about booster shots and third vaccines, whereas we know now from the WHO that less than 10% of African countries are going to even meet their vaccine target for this year. Just a very sad manifestation of the global vaccine inequity.
In the absence of vaccinations, lockdowns may be on the horizon. Such measures already have taken a harsh economic toll across southern Africa. Haas says the halt to retail and other services has made it hard for many people to survive.
Particularly with respect to the urban poor, is that a lot of income is used to purchase food, or a high proportion of income is used to purchase food. And when they are not able to make income, then that affects food security as well.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is convening the country's coronavirus council this weekend in response to the new variant. The government says it will announce any new measures in coming days. Linda Givtash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Germany, which has seen a sharp uptick in COVID-19 cases in recent weeks, also wants to stop flights coming from southern Africa, as we hear from AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma.
Germany's health minister says airlines coming back from southern Africa will only be able to transport German citizens home, and travellers will need to go into quarantine for 14 days, whether they are vaccinated or not. Germany's seen new record daily case numbers in recent days and passed the mark of 100,000 deaths from COVID-19 on Thursday.
That was AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma. Turkey reaffirmed on Friday its commitment to recent interest rate cuts, even as the lira plunged to record lows, with the deputy finance minister and central bank saying the inflation would pass and the policy has helped boost commercial loans. The lira hit 13.45 against the dollar on Tuesday as President Tayyip Erdogan defended the central bank's move to slash the policy interest rate to 15% despite near 20% inflation. The currency has lost up to 45% of its value this year, with around half of those losses occurring since the start of last week. Erdogan has refused to enact measures to try to rescue the lira from falling further. Advisors who have urged him to raise interest rates have been fired. Erdogan says he thinks keeping interest rates low is the solution to the country's economic woes. Reporter Dorian Jones, who is in the Turkish capital, Istanbul, tells me Turks are suffering and looking for ways to hold on to the money they still have.
Already, 55% of Turks' savings is in foreign currency. It's a very high figure, and that figure is expected to continue to rise, which will only further weaken the Turkish currency going forward. Turks are really worried. They are pouring money into foreign currency, in buying gold. If they have any means of savings, they are abandoning the Turkish lira as a means of saving because interest rates are falling. They're getting less for their money in the bank. At the same time, the value of the lira is continuing to fall. And that is another fear, that Turkey get into this vicious cycle of rising, falling currency rates, and people more and more rushing to the currency, foreign currency, to protect their savings. And that is leading to concerns that ultimately the government could be forced into some capital controls, and that could only further exacerbate the problems of the country going forward. Turkey is heading to a critical moment here in terms of whether the government could possibly pass the point of no return, and that the situation could spiral out of control, as has happened in the past. The last massive crisis was 2002, which incidentally was key to bringing President Erdogan, then the leader of the AKP, to power in the first place.
Does anybody see any way out of this? Is there outside experts that might have an influence on Erdogan to change his mind?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, Erdogan has now what is believed to have an increasingly small circle of advisors that he relies on, and people within his party, former ministers, and even present ministers speaking anonymously, are voicing concern that President Erdogan isn't listening to the right people. And as long as that continues, and if Erdogan does appear to be in some kind of bunker mentality going forward, he doesn't appear to be in any mood to change. And in fact, he does have this history that if he believes he's on the right course, whatever happens around him, he continues. And in fact, he only doubles on down on it. And that does seem to be the case at the moment. Possibly he's looking to countries like the oil-rich countries of the Gulf, like the United Arab Emirates. The de facto leader of the United Arab Emirates is visiting Turkey Wednesday. Possibly he sees a possible tens of billions of dollars of investment to prop up the currency and the economy. Possibly looking to Saudi Arabia, although he has very difficult relations with that country. Possibly that he sees as a possible lifeline going forward. But speaking to experts, Turkey is a large economy. It's a population of over 80 million people. It requires tens and tens of billions of dollars to put the economy on the right direction. But on top of that, as experts say, Turkey has to go back to what is considered normal, orthodox financial policies. And until he does that, the consensus appears to be that the problems and the pains of the Turkish economy are set to get worse.
That was reporter Dorian Jones. He was speaking to me from the Turkish capital, Istanbul, earlier this week about Turkey's currency collapse. Five members of the U.S. Congress have traveled to Taiwan in a show of support for the independent island nation. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
It's a bipartisan group of U.S. lawmakers who had a meeting with Taiwan's president, Tsai Ing-wen, early this morning to show rock-solid support for the self-governing island. This visit comes as tensions between Taiwan and China have risen to their highest level in decades. The two sides split during a 1949 civil war, but China still considers it part of its territory. Michigan Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin, who's part of the traveling delegation, said on Twitter that her office was contacted by the Chinese embassy and told it should cancel the trip. This is the third visit this year by U.S. lawmakers. The White House has also invited Taiwan to attend a summit for democracy next month, which drew a sharp rebuke from China. I'm Jackie Quinn.
The Interior Minister of France told his UK counterpart on Friday that he had cancelled her invitation to a meeting this weekend after criticism of France by Prime Minister Boris Johnson over the Channel migrant crisis. Reporter Catherine Field tells me the meeting will now be just with Belgian, German, Netherlands, and EU officials. Field says there are a lot of calls in France for it to abandon the agreement it has with the UK to toughen patrols on its beaches and on trucks heading to the English Channel ports.
It really has turned into an absolute diplomatic nightmare. The French say that they've been trying to talk to the British for many years about this issue of migrants trying to get across the English Channel. They've been trying to find some sort of way whereby the British would take this more seriously. And overnight, the French received a letter from the UK Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, giving five reasons how this could be solved. Now, the problem for the French was that the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson put this letter out on Twitter in time for the morning papers. And the French say that's just not how you deal with these matters. This is diplomacy. You do this between governments and you don't do it on Twitter. And so they have cut off for the time being these talks with the British and say when the British are going to be serious, then they will get back to them.
So the standoff continues, or what's happening right now on the ground?
On the ground, there are still migrants setting out to sea, hoping to get across the channel. And every day, the police are out there trying to stop people taking to their boats. If you look at one day this week, 671 migrants were stopped on that journey trying to get across to the UK.
Are there still hundreds there that we're talking about, or?
There are literally thousands there. They are camped out in the dunes and the scrubland nearby. At best, they're living in tents. At worst, they're just outdoors in the rain, in the cold, hoping that somehow a migrant smuggler or a people trafficker will come along and offer them the chance to get on a boat to go to the United Kingdom.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She was speaking to me Friday from Paris, France. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Carol Van Dam. In Siberia, a top regional official says search teams have found a survivor in a Siberian coal mine where dozens of miners are presumed dead after a methane explosion. The regional governor said in a message app on Friday that a survivor was found in the mine in southwestern Siberia and taken to a nearby hospital. Six bodies were also recovered, bringing the death toll to 20. 31 people are still missing. A second group of Iraqis has returned home on a repatriation flight from Belarus after trying to enter the European Union. More than 570 people returned on two flights that landed in Erbil Airport, the northern Kurdish-run region, Friday. Most of them were Iraqi Kurds. Three flights have brought Kurds home over the past week. Returnees accuse the Belarusian border authorities of cruelty, from beatings to threats. They say border guards tried to push them to cross into neighboring EU countries, Poland and Lithuania. The Solomon Islands move to switch its diplomatic ties from Taiwan to Beijing has been blamed for arson and looting in the national capital, where anti-government protesters are demanding the prime minister step down. Australian police, troops, and diplomats are helping local police restore calm in the area while trying to keep out of the domestic dispute. Experts say the unrest is being driven by the same underlying problems that have surfaced before: ethnic tensions, widespread poverty, and a perceived lack of sharing of resources between the Solomon's largest island of Guadalcanal and the most populous island of Mileta. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says nearly 80 people have been murdered this year in a detention camp in northeastern Syria, holding the wives and children of Islamic State fighters. Camp authorities say the women rule the Al-Hol camp with violence as they try to keep the group active years after its defeat. VOA's Heather Murdoch visited the Al-Hol and Al-Raj detention camps and has filed this report.
We are told not to go inside this market here in Al-Hol, a detention center in northeastern Syria holding tens of thousands of women and children of defeated Islamic State fighters. Authorities say some of the extremist families here are armed, and there have been as many as 79 murders so far this year. They suspect militants on the outside are smuggling in weapons and that the murders are mostly punishments doled out by the self-declared IS religious police inside the camp. Despite ongoing security operations against IS in and around Al-Hol, there are still monthly killings, according to the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces running the camp.
Several days ago, some journalists went to the camp and IS children threw stones at them. IS women enforce the IS laws, and women who break these laws are killed.
Most of the detained women and children are from Syria or Iraq, but there are also women from 57 other countries. The United Nations has called on those countries to repatriate their citizens from Al-Hol and Al-Rash, another northeastern Syrian detention camp for women and children associated with IS. Al-Rash is considered less extremist and less violent, but even here, children throw rocks and bits of glass bottles at visiting foreigners, and 16 tents were burnt down last month. Women in Al-Rash, who choose to speak to reporters, have one overwhelming message. They want to go home.
I do not want other people to make the mistakes I did by coming to Syria, bringing my children and getting them killed. I regret so much. I still hope we can go to France and have hope for my children.
Off camera, women in Al-Hol tell us about harsh living conditions and also complain that boys between 12 to 14 years old are taken from their mothers and kept elsewhere in an effort to de-radicalize them. Most of the women and children in these camps surrendered in 2019 as IS lost its last bit of territory after controlling vast swaths of Iraq and Syria for years. Since then, local authorities have pleaded with the international community for help, saying the camps and other makeshift detention centers holding uncharged men, women, and children are ticking time bombs of extremism. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, at the Al-Hol and Al-Rash camps in Syria.
This is VOA News. Cameroon's largest lake, Lake Assa, has been invaded by Salvinia molesta, an aquatic fern native to Brazil, which hinders navigation, makes fishing impossible, and blocks water access. To combat the spreading plant, a local aid group is training fishermen to harvest the fern and transform it into coal. Anne Nizukenku reports from Dizengu, Cameroon.
Florent Changa caught only 3 fish today, a situation that makes him desperate because he can no longer make a living as a fisherman. That's because an aquatic fern native to Brazil is making it difficult to fish in Lake Ossa. So, Changa and other fishermen meet twice a week to remove what they can. Since the Salvinia molesta invaded Cameroon's largest lake in 2016, Changa's life has changed for the worse.
The children do not go to school because of the Salvinia. When the lake was good in the 80s and 90s, our children went to school, but today we can't pay for their schooling.
Lake Ossa is a wildlife reserve, home to freshwater turtles, crocodiles, manatees, and more than 18 species of fish. The local aid group has trained community fishermen to transform the Salvinia into organic coal. After collecting the fern, it is dried and burned. The resulting powder is mixed with other substances and then passed through a mold to create charcoal piece for domestic use. Because the fern grows back every 7 days, the NGO is also experimenting with a biological solution, raising a weevil that will feed specifically on Salvinia. The group has released the weevil in the pilot site in the lake. They hope the insect will multiply, feeding on the Salvinia leaves and producing leaf that will fix on the new plant growth.
And birth is where the new leaves are coming out, and at that level you have proteins that the plants use to grow, and the larva will hijack those proteins and therefore will stop the growth of the plants. So not only the weevil will stop the growth of the plants, but it will also destroy the biomass already present.
The Cameroon government agreed to a pilot test of the biological solution, but has not discounted other methods.
We would like to see the mechanical method applied as well as the biological control. that we don't just focus on biological control, which may take us much longer. We can apply both methods. We are looking for funding.
The fishermen are encouraged to sell the Sardinia charcoal to generate income, but they say they would rather see a solution to clean up the lake so that they can resume fishing. Anne Zwanke for VOA News, Dizangé, Cameroon.
A new report warns that Australia's native wildlife is in the grip of an unprecedented alien attack. Experts at the National Science Agency are predicting that much of the country's unique flora and fauna is in danger of disappearing by 2050 unless urgent action is taken. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Non-native species have invaded Australia and threaten to overrun indigenous plants and animals. Invasive pests include European rabbits, which infest two-thirds of Australia, feral cats, pigs, foxes and cane toads. Introduced species are endangering more than 80% of Australia's threatened species. A report, Fighting Plagues and Predators, Australia's Path Towards a Pest and Weed-Free Future, highlights what researchers believe is a looming wave of new extinctions. The study was compiled by the CSIRO, the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organisation, a government agency. Andy Shepherd is CSIRO's Research Director for Biosecurity. He says Australia's colonisation by the British more than 200 years ago has left a devastating environmental legacy.
Look, Australia, as a lot of post-British colonial countries, suffered from a huge amount of introduction of exotic species early in their colonisation histories. You know, there were societies set up to deliberately introduce stuff so that the Europeans felt more at home. Australia, just like New Zealand, have suffered enormously as a result. Australia, unfortunately, has the worst record internationally for mammalian extinction, and that's largely to do with the activities of feral cats and feral foxes.
The report released Tuesday estimated the cost of the damage caused by invasive species in Australia, mostly weeds, feral cats, rabbits and fire ants, at about $18 billion each year and growing. The study said that urgent, decisive, coordinated action was needed to stop the spread of invasive species and protect Australia's irreplaceable native animals and plants. Traditionally, chemical baits and biological controls have been used to manage feral pest populations. The methods are controversial, and some animal welfare advocates have criticised them as inhumane. Scientists in Australia are working on genetic pest control techniques. Testing is underway on mice, but a so-called working system could be up to 5 years away. One potential biocontrol involves disrupting the breeding cycles of rodents to limit their ability to reproduce. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam.
This is Science in a Minute.
When you think of what bees eat, you probably picture them buzzing from one flower to another, gathering nectar and pollen to bring back to their hives. But several species of stingless bees supplement their diets with carrion or the flesh of dead animals. Scientists have found that one family of bees called Trigona or vulture bees has evolved to completely shun plant life and use only carrion for its food. Researchers from three U.S. universities have found the microbiome, a collection of microorganisms in the guts of most bees, has remained constant for 80 million years. According to a University of California Riverside press release, the scientists found that the microbiome in the Trigona bees was different and also had acid-loving bacteria like those found in other carrion eaters, something that their vegetarian cousins don't have. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of Nadia Taha and the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Have a great weekend. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.